CataractClub.com, podcast series, episode number 142 with Dr. Francis Price. What you absolutely must know about USA Health Insurance and the future of your practice. Welcome back to our Cataract Coach podcast. Today, I have a very special guest, Dr. Francis Price. You've seen before all the stuff about learning DMEC, DSEC, colon transplantation. He's truly a world-renowned expert in this. But there's also more we want to talk about, and that is perhaps healthcare reform, a topic of which I know almost nothing. So welcome to the podcast, my friend.
How are you doing, Uday?
I'm doing great. I've been looking forward to this because obviously I love to talk about the corny stuff with you because you probably have the world's sharpest mind when it comes to that. But also, I don't know a dang thing about healthcare reform.
Well, you know, it's turned out that I think that's my hobby. Because a hobby is something you spend time on, you don't make any money on it. And so since I was a resident, I was on the committee that oversaw the health insurance that our state medical association in Indiana offered to doctors. And then in 2019, due to some different things going on with the government, they spun off the group practices from the individual practices. Okay. So just the reason that happened is that with ADA, Obamacare, you could no longer write health insurance for individuals because you couldn't take their health history into account when you set rates. Okay. That'd be like buying car insurance and not asking people how many wrecks they have. It just, from an actuarial standpoint, it doesn't work. But you can do that for groups.
Okay. So
in 2019, we spun off the health plans for the group medical practices in the state. And these are obviously independent practices, not those that are employed by hospitals and so forth. And we became self-insured because when we did that, we actually started out with like $15 million. That was half of what the state medical had accumulated by taking some of the risk with their health plan over the preceding 30 years. And so we became self-insured. And what that means when you're self-insured is that you still buy insurance for like really high claims. And for instance,
so like reinsurance for like catastrophic things.
Right. So if you have a person that's their claims add up to over $250,000, then you have insurance that pays that. Or for the health plan as a whole, if you're over some aggregate amount that's real high, you pay for that. And usually you don't hit that second one. But you typically get a few people every year that might have bad cancer, severe accidents, something like that, where they run up high claims. And that's what you have some stop loss insurance for. It stops your loss. But otherwise, we're self-insured. And depending upon where you set that stop loss depends upon how much you pay for that supplemental insurance. And so that's what we do. And since we're in charge of paying for all the claims, we get to analyze where the money goes and, what places cost more than others and so forth. And one of the first things we recognized is that, like, if you get an infusion or some treatment in a doctor's office, the insurance carriers typically pay a hospital-owned facility five times what they pay a physician-owned facility.
Why?
That's a good question, Uday. Something we'd like to change, but basically it gets to the point where the doctors doing these things don't make enough to pay a nurse to do the infusion. The slide from the AMA that they put together in 2004 shows the reimbursement from CMS to doctors, which is basically a flat line, whereas inflation goes up at about 45 degrees and hospital reimbursement for both inpatient and outpatient goes up about 55 degrees. So they're staying, above inflation and we're going way down. So the consumer price index says that costs for things have gone up 1.8 times since 2001, whereas our fees are pretty level. So we're just not getting paid as much.
But the hospitals and the big health system are doing great.
They are. And they get a fee increase every year, pretty much based on the consumer price index with a little extra.
So this is to squish out the little man, meaning the private practice doctors.
It really is.
Because you get employed by the big companies and you have no say, you're just an employee.
Yeah. And so then that's another part of the talk that I give that we can get into.
Sure.
Is that, when we talk to the people in Congress, they go, well, there's no money to pay doctors. And there's a couple drugs that I highlight that really shows what's going on. And one is Forteo, that's for osteoporosis. In 2004, that cost about $7,000 a year. And now it's up to just below $50,000 a year.
Same drug.
Yeah, same drug. And that's on GoodRx.
And that's, well, that's for the cheapest possible GoodRx. And
oh, it's even better. Humira. Humira was $15,000 a year in 2004. And now it's $189,000 a year. Cheapest you can get it on GoodRx.
And then cataracts are now dipping below 500 surgeon fee.
Yeah, next year we're going to get, we're getting an 11% cut right now. And we're going to be like $466 for a cataract.
Wow. And,
yeah. And so, yeah, we're getting the screws put to us, but nobody else is. Medicare Advantage plans, they got a 5% increase in 2005. And that was after an expose that the Wall Street Journal did last year that showed they were sending nurses out to actually make up diagnoses on people. So how often have you done a diabetic cataract as a diagnosis?
No.
Probably never. Yeah. And so, anyway, the Wall Street Journal found out the United Health Group was sending nurses out, giving people the diagnosis of diabetic cataracts, which means that Medicare would pay them twice what they normally would for that patient for the whole year. And they did that on patients that already had their cataracts out.
That is so crazy. But what was the punishment? Nothing. Let me guess.
Nothing. Well, they got a 5% raise.
So they got this is so crazy.
Yeah. And so that's kind of the things I talk about in my talk. And if we ever get together again, I'll figure out how I can show it on your podcast. But yeah, I have some slides on that, which are interesting. So like for Forteo, you know, since 2004, the Consumer Price Index says that cost has gone up, you know, 1.73 times what it is. And Forteo went up 700 times.
Wow.
And Humira went up 1,216 times. And so the drug, nothing's happening to the drug companies. And they're putting all this money into them. The hospitals are charging a lot, and they're putting the squeeze on us. We're the only part of healthcare that's budget neutral. And so, you know, these are things that everybody needs to know about and talk about our congressional representatives about. And so I get a lot of doctors that say, well, you know, I don't really feel like I should talk to congressmen. You know, that's, you know, basically not clean or something to talk about money. But they're our employer. And all the commercial stuff peg their payments based on Medicare primarily. Mm-hmm. And if we don't want to talk to our employer, then we're not going to get a pay raise. In fact, we're getting a pay cut.
Well, if I could play devil's advocate, let's say you're a small private practice doctor, someone in the community who doesn't want to talk to his representative or her representative because they say it's futile. What all the effort from all these big ophthalmology and medical organizations over the last 20 years have resulted in? Nothing. So why waste my time?
Well, I think that's our problem. I don't think we get represented that well. You know, all of our medical groups, and I think Ascaris has been the best, but even they supported MIPS. You know, remember SGR?
Yeah.
SGR got to where it was going to be a 30% cut if they implemented it, so everybody ignored it, and they quit donating to Congress. But MIPS was a bad deal from the beginning, and all of our societies back that. And I don't think that our societies have done a good job of representing what the problem is.
Maybe the societies care more about the societies than they do about their members.
Maybe could be.
Because, well, this is honestly, sometimes this is the feeling I get. And maybe I'm a little crazy, but that's what I get. Even in ophthalmology, would we pay for anti-VEGF brand name injections, individual injections? Why does 95% of the dollar cost of that go to the drug company and 5% goes to the surgeon who takes 100% of the liability, has to do all the billing, all the non, why? Why is it a 95-5 split?
Well, when you talk to the retina guys, I think they're making more money on the credit cards and the carrying fee than they are for the injection. And there's something wrong. There's something wrong with that, yeah.
That's how short-sighted or myopic we are. Because we'll say, okay, I'll get my Amex points from it, and I'll get, these drugs are so expensive, I'll get a million Amex points a year. But the short-sightedness is, You're still giving 95% of the cost of this that Medicare's paying. It comes out of is going to the actual pharma company to make the drug, which has been making for now a decade.
Yeah.
5% goes to you to take all the liability, and you're happy just to get a few Amex points out of it. We're crazy. I'm crazy. What are we doing here?
In our health plan, because a lot of these new drugs are coming out really expensive, and they're non-sustainable. And that's one of the advantages I have being a trustee for the health plan is I get to talk to consultants. Okay. About not only actuary stuff, but dig into what's going on with the PBMs, pharmacy benefit managers, and the carriers. And that's where I'm finding out a lot of this stuff. Some of it I just research. But if you look at a brand name drug, about 70% of that is typically a markup or a kickback that goes to the carrier and their PBM.
Wow. So I should quit being an ophthalmologist. I should convert and switch gears and become a pharmacy benefits manager.
All they do is make profits, Uday. So,
too bad. You know, I love surgery. That's the problem. I love doing surgery. Yeah.
So you remember back when we could talk about off-label uses, and there were the wars between Ocuflox and ciprofloxacin, and you know, 1 year one would be covered tier one, 1 year the other would be covered tier one, and I could never figure out what in the world was going on with all that.
I don't know. Tell me.
Well, it turns out there was something, not so much now, but because people are finding out about it, they got other ways now, but something called a rebate. So now if you send me a patient and I give you money for that, that's illegal and we'd both go to jail.
Right.
But if you're a pharmacy benefit manager and you get a health plan to use a particular drug, it is okay for the pharmacy company to pay the pharmacy benefit manager a fee for each time that drug is used.
What?
That's called a rebate.
And
that's kind of the way that Omidria works too. You know, we have rebates and you go, well, isn't that illegal to pay us, you know, part of that? But no, that's a rebate. And that's legal because physicians don't want to contribute to congressional people, but pharmacy benefit managers and pharma companies, they contribute a lot to Congress. So that's legal for them to do that. And so 1 year, you know, one company would pay more to the pharmacy benefit manager. So their eye drop would be listed as tier one. And the next year, the other one would outbid them. And so that started happening where these things just keep bid higher and higher. So it turns out.
It's so crazy. I can't believe this.
Oh, yeah. 80% of the prescriptions in the U.S. go through three pharmacy benefit managers, all that are part of a large insurance corporation in the country.
Wow.
And then there's four, and there's six. If you look at six, they do 90% of all the prescriptions in the U.S. So these guys are essentially setting the fees for what these new drugs come in at because they want to get a big kickback. And it is truly corrupt. It's truly criminal. You know, Trump recently did that deal with Pfizer and used the tariffs as a thing to do that. And as I read it, and this is what he said, we'll see how it works out, that he's going to bypass the carriers and the PBMs. You'll have to go to a government website, which is called TrumpRx, which I think is just a hoot. And you'll be able to get the discounted price. And he's Pfizer agreed to sell their drugs at the same price here as they do in the rest of the Western world, which means the rest of the Western world will probably see a drug increase cost, but ours will go down tremendously because so much of the cost of the drug is a kickback, and he's cutting the kickbacks out.
Wow.
So if it works that way, you'll see over the next year and a half, I think, a huge, huge change. So why is this important? Well, as a health plan, between 2023 and 2024, the cost of our pharmaceutical portion of the spend went up 20%.
Mm.
In 2024 to 2025, it went up 30%. And we actually have a pharmacy benefit manager where the rebates come back to us, but there's still all these other hidden costs that the carriers and the drug companies have put into play. They've cut back the amount of rebates, but they have other markups that are going on. So you'll love this too. So the path of the drug from the pharmaceutical company is that it's purchased by a GPO, a group purchasing organization, that's very often offshore to avoid federal regulation. They mark it up. Then they sell it back to the PBM or a specialty pharmacy that's part of the same carrier company. They mark it up, and then they sell to the pharmacy or distribute it to the pharmacy. So they have all these different levels where they're marking the drugs up. And the same thing happens for generics. The generics are getting big markups too. And at the time that they're cutting us, these other areas are all increasing their fees. So that's what I talk about when I do talks on healthcare. And so I don't do a lot of talks just because I have to work, you know, to keep the practice afloat. But when I do give talks now, I'll say my second talk is going to be on healthcare reform.
It's a topic that we don't learn about in our structured training of medical school residency fellowship. And it's something that obviously affects us every day the rest of our life.
Oh, yeah. So here's a tip for all the docs out there.
Okay.
When you're going to a pharmacy talk, okay, they're buying you your dinner, they're buying it for your lunch, ask them, what's the cost of the drug? And they'll go, oh, don't worry, it won't cost your patient anything.
Right. Go, where did the money come from?
No. Tell me what the overall cost is. And they'll hem and haw, but you really should do that. It's pretty amazing. So there's the new drug for thyroid disease, Tepezza. Do you have any idea what that costs?
Like more than $100,000.
Okay. So a couple years ago, 2 or 3 years ago before the Academy, somebody gave a talk on this, and the average commercial cost, and this is for 7 or 8 IV infusions that happen over the course of the year, average commercial cost was
$823,000. Wow. That's average. So half or more.
Yeah. Yeah, some are higher, some are lower. Even Medicare will pay up to, you know, over $500,000 for it based on weight.
What? So bananas.
So they don't have money to pay us to, you know, take care of a corneal ulcer or, you know, somebody that's got iritis. They want to cut our fees because utilization's going up and they don't have money. But this is where the money's going. And
what can we do?
I think that what we need to do is educate. We need to educate, you know, especially the people in rural areas. You know, the base of the GOP is rural America, and primary care doctors, OB, they can't stay in practice. They have to be employed by a hospital. They don't make enough. I mean, look at our practices. We're lucky because, in a way, we're doing surgery. But the main people that are doing okay are the people that own part of a surgery center. Otherwise, you need to work for a hospital where they subsidize your income with money they make on the facilities. And so the healthcare costs are out of control. The cost of pharmaceuticals are out of control. And we need to educate, not lecture, but educate the legislators, especially on the state level. And I'm spending a lot of time in our state government trying to help them with healthcare reforms. Per capita, Indiana is the most industrialized state in the country. We're not the biggest state, but per capita, we do more industrial. So we have a lot of employers-sponsored health plans. And the employers have gone nuts with our increasing costs. We have the fourth highest hospital charges in the country, even though we have one of the lowest cost of livings. So at least in our state, there's a lot of impetus to do something, but they don't know what to do because they're not in healthcare. They don't understand how healthcare works. And just like you don't understand how the insurance side works, if you start to figure it out with what you know about medicine, you could be a huge resource to these state legislators, your governor, maybe your governor, and certainly your congressional people. Because something's going to have to happen. So here's a great example, GLP-1s.
Okay.
Do you think those should be covered by health plans?
I mean, there's certainly the cases where it's quite important to have them, right, in certain patients.
So would you cover it for obesity if you're the head of a health plan?
If you do, then hopefully you'll have less consequential disease, such as metabolic disease, diabetes, hypertension, and all that. So I don't know. Hopefully in the long term, it'll be some sort of cost savings.
Well, this is a trick question, Uday. So last year, before there was some price wars between a couple of the manufacturers, the cost was like $1,200 a month.
Okay.
For a GLP-1. Now, you're in California. You guys are all physically fit out there, but overall in the country, 40% of the U.S. is obese, and in Indiana, I'm sure it's even higher. But let's just say 40% of your health plan is going to go on a GLP-1 at $1,200 a month.
Wow. That means you're dead.
Yeah. So that comes out to be $480 a month per member that you're going to pay more just to cover GLP-1s.
Why can't we have like the $5 generic version?
Well, I mean, that's what we need, because when you look at, you know, these costs that I told you for Forteo and Humira, they're starting out all these new drugs way higher than they need to be. And what I've tried to tell our advisors in our health plan, they go, oh, no, you can't do this. It's not fair, or it's not, you know, legal. I said, what we need to do is to look at the cost of a drug, look at the population that we're, you know, going to use it or in our health plan, and then look at the incidence of that particular problem in the health plan and see how much it potentially could cost us. Mm-hmm. And I said, then we shouldn't cover drugs that we can't afford. And they said, well, you can't do that. I said, well, we're going to have to, or we're going to go broke. And that's what the whole country has to do. If you, we had these two new eye drops, oil-based ones, both really good. We use a lot of them. They came in at $800 a bottle. That's $10,000 a year. If you look at 6.5% of the U.S. population is dry eye conservatively, it's anywhere from 5 to 50%, let's say 6.5.
Okay.
We're looking at like $220 billion a year.
That drop is over the counter in India for a dollar.
Well, yeah, and in Europe it's $20 over the counter. Yeah,
but here it's $800.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that we have to start doing. I mean, they want to ration doctors, but we're running nobody. That's why so many doctors are leaving. But they need to look at this for all the drugs. I mean, what can we afford? And there's certainly a lot of reduction that needs to be done, or else the whole system's going to break. We're running out of money. I mean, just as a trustee for a health plan, you know, how much do you want your rates to go up? We're raising our rates, I think, 10% this year. We had a few years we didn't raise because we control our pharmacies so tight. But these new drugs and new biologics are out of control.
Yeah, health insurance rates. I mean, for me, I can't believe how much I pay for health insurance.
Yeah.
And I set myself the highest possible deductible. So I'll pay everything out of pocket for, I think, like the first 10 grand. I think my deductible is 10.
Yeah.
So I basically never use the health insurance. It's just in case I get hit by a bus.
But the problem is, Uday, you got other people in the health plan. They go on a drug like Humira. You're paying, you know, $18,000, $20,000 a month. It doesn't take too many people like that to just screw your whole plan up. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course. I mean, the math. Or the other one, your thyroid drug for $800,000.
Yeah. Great drug. I'm not sure it's worth that amount, but I think it's a neat drug. It's a good drug, but it needs to be substantially reduced in cost.
And now compare the cost to do, let's say a little bit later stage thyroid disease. You've got to do orbital decompression. What's the surgeon fee on that? A few hundred dollars?
Yeah. Yeah.
Makes zero sense.
Yeah.
So then, I mean, ultimately, what is it we can even do?
Well, I think it's education. I think it's education and transparency. So
it hasn't worked in 20 years.
We haven't had transparency. Nobody knows what the cost is. And this whole thing that, you know, the copay assistance, the reason they tell you that they take a drug, you know, like Forteo or any of these others, there's multiple drugs that we prescribe that are $50,000 a year. They have a copay assistance where the drug company is just so nice. They've set up this shell company that will actually pay the deductible for the patient so they can get through their $5,000 deductible. And then after that, the drug's free. That's what the rep tells you. But what happens is your health plan's paying $45,000 for that.
Oh, boy.
So we need to change. We need a lot more transparency. when they give the talks on these drugs, they need to tell everybody what it costs. When they do an ad on TV, you know, that all these people are happy and dancing, they need to say the cost of this drug is, you know, like $200,000 a year. And that's why they're happy and dancing and they can pay for the commercial.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess the big business part of medicine now is just, it's always just trying to squeeze max profits. And obviously the pharmacy side is, pharmaceutical side has done really well on that, of really maximized profit. But even on the other things, like here in LA, there are like universities buying up private surgery centers, putting a university name on the outside, and now they can bill a multiple. They get paid a multiple. All you did was change the sign on the door.
Yeah. And so our major carrier in the state, it doesn't matter what state it is, they pay them five times as much for a hospital-owned facility as they do a physician-owned surgery center. Medicare pays twice as much. And yeah, just changing the name.
Literally, change the sign on the door, and then they get paid a multiple of it. That's a great business. God, what a business. I buy them all up.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's non-sustainable. That's the problem. Because I see it as a payer, you know, not the insurance carrier. They're just an administrator. They take a percent of whatever they pay. They don't care about controlling costs. But whoever's paying the premiums, those are the people who are getting screwed. And I think people are waking up. You're going to see something happen. But you need to be educating people because you know more about healthcare than anybody else. Otherwise, they can make it a lot worse with their changes. And, I think we all need to get educated. Doctors need to really lead this. And I actually think ophthalmology is in a great position to do this. We're one of the few specialties that's still primarily independent. And we're all, well, not all of us, but I'd say the vast majority of us are pretty entrepreneurial. We're used to taking risk. We're used to weighing things. And I think we're in a perfect position to work with legislators on educating them about what's going on. And also the other people we can educate are the people that are in charge of the health plans. And they'll probably even be more interested than the legislators. Legislators will be interested if all these businesses that have health plans start leaning on them and say, hey, you know, this is costing me a lot of money, and here's what you need to do.
Right. No, for sure. I mean, it makes me wonder, is this do we see the demise of private practice? It's already shrinking, even just in ophthalmology.
Yeah.
You've got now private equity buying lots of practices and doctors just turning into basically employees. You've got academic centers now, which are basically no different, indistinguishable from private equity groups, where docs are just, you know, another employee.
Right.
We'll pay you half the market rate of what you should be earning. But we'll give you this pretend professor title, even though you're professing to no one. You're just working in the clinic all day. So it's like, I think they're just, I mean, we've seen it even in ophthalmology, the number of people doing contracts is declining every year. It becomes more and more challenging. At a $460 cataract surgeon fee, how do you pay your overhead? How do you keep the lights on?
Well, it's getting to be a problem. If we didn't have premium IOLs, we'd be in trouble.
Right. I mean, in the past, we made it up with volume, right? There was I can't remember who, I wish I could give credit, who someone said in 1980, you needed to do 8 cataracts to buy a brand new base Ford F-150 pickup truck. And now you have to do 120 of them to buy the same base Ford F-150 pickup truck. So it's like,
A few years ago, I was in a dinner. We had one of the U.S. senators in the state. I was with the Indiana State Medical Association. And I was talking to the senator about a procedure that we were doing that we were actually losing money on. And the doctor next to me just said, oh, well, you need to make that up on volume. And he was serious.
But if you're losing money, more volume than you
need more. Yeah, I know. He just didn't quite get it. But it wasn't an ophthalmologist. It was another specialty.
Yeah, I know. I guess we're just seeing it just so devalued now, whatever we're doing. So I think we drew the short straw, basically.
Well, I think we did it to ourselves, but I really think we need to educate people. People want good care. And I think we're reaching the tipping point where you're going to see more people go cash only. That's what you're seeing in primary care. You're seeing a lot of people cash only because, you know, the other part of the talks I give are about what the carriers do, you know, inappropriate denials, clawbacks that are inappropriate. And you have, I mean, we're powerless against these guys, and it costs us so much money to go up against them. So we're going to see if we can get the state to change that a little bit. You got to have hope, Uday.
I feel bad. Listen, I'm halfway through my career or more. I feel bad for the young ones who are just finishing right now and getting out there. Like, this is the reality you're entering the workforce in.
Right, right.
It's just a lot more challenging. But, you know, I don't know. I still have hope. Maybe it's just I'm the eternal optimist.
Yeah. Well, I think we know a lot. We need to share our knowledge with these people. And, I mean, you touch so many people. It's just something for you to look into. You'd be a powerful source for these guys in California.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Very good point here. It's just, God, there's a frustration here. Like, what do you even do anymore? Like, but when it comes to even drugs for ophthalmology, you know what? I just eat the cost. I buy the compounded combo drops. And I just give them to the patient. Just have it.
Yeah.
Because it's cheaper than having someone field phone calls all day and say, no, this one's not covered. You need a different topical NSAID. And then I don't need the grief.
Right.
So I buy it. I just literally put it in the patient's head. There you go. Present from me to you.
Yeah, we found that with our cross-linking. We actually have our own study. For other reasons, we don't use the approved ones for some of the reasons I've talked about already. But we found that some of the people just weren't buying the drugs.
Right.
So we just started getting the compounded one and giving it to them, just like you said, because we wanted to make sure they had drops that they took. And we can't make them take them, but at least we know they have them now.
Right. And
they're not. The FTC did an analysis of drug cost in U.S. A year or two ago. They've never done anything about it. And that's where the information about you know, how the consolidation of prescriptions isn't just a handful of PBMs. But they also found that 3 out of 10 patients they interviewed said they either restricted or didn't get their medicines because of cost.
Mm.
And so, you know, obviously you've noticed that given your patients, you know, a lot of drops at your cost.
Sure.
And we have too. And I think that the CMS has played upon the good-heartedness of physicians to take care of their patients, knowing they can cut us and we'll keep seeing them. But what's happening is people are just going out of business. And that's what we have to try to turn around.
Right. I mean, the model, what you're saying now is when you said the primary care doctor switching to a concierge model, that's me. That's my primary care doctor, the one who I see. She charges me an annual fee of a few $1,000 just for the ability to be her patient.
Right, right. And, you know, we have some guys that set up a business for primary care docs here where they charge $150, $165 a month. And their docs do well. They don't do any insurance. They don't do any government plans. Legislators don't like to hear that because they want to promise everybody health care and Medicaid, but they just don't pay enough. You know, you lose money. There's the old, I don't know if you're old enough to remember the old cars that were so big that you had to turn the engine off when you were putting gas in or you couldn't keep up. And, and that's kind of the way it is with Medicaid. You spend more money trying to get paid than they actually pay you. And, at least in our state, California.
Well, I haven't taken the Medicaid for California in 20 years.
Yeah.
It's just not sustainable. Just how can you do it? It's too much grief.
Yeah.
And I think at some point, I guess we'll probably see people dropping out of Medicare too, right?
I think so. I think it's going to happen. Yeah.
It's going to be just, you know, patients are going to have to pay out of pocket. And then that's the challenge too, because what percent of the population can even afford to do that?
Yeah.
So, and even on our side, all the new phaco machines, guess what? They're more expensive. The cost per case, more expensive. The cost per pack, everything's gone up. The viscoelastics, the IOL, everything goes up and up and up, except your reimbursement, your payment goes down.
Well, even the facility fees for private ASCs now, Medicare wants to make them budget neutral.
Wow.
It's out of control. Yeah. So I would say at a minimum, people should be writing to their congressional people. I'd send letters to the head of CMS and Trump and Vance and just say, hey, this is non-sustainable. I mean, it's not a question of whether we're taking home money or not, because what they don't realize for independent practices, you know, there's four groups of docs that get paid.
Okay.
There's the independent docs where when we get money, it doesn't just go into our pocket. It pays for our staff, mm-hmm. our equipment, our rent, supplies, all of our coders, all of our consultants we have to make sure we're compliant with Medicare, do MIPS right, and on and on and on. And then a second group are the independent docs that work somewhere like a hospital, but they don't have any overhead. And then you have the group that are employed by a university or a hospital, and they get subsidized by the fees that these other groups make. And the same thing if they're working for a carrier like United Health Group and Optum. And then the fourth group are those employed by private equity that are, you know, negotiating all their own rates. And at some point they have to realize there's got to be a differential, because we just can't support a practice based on the fees that they're giving us now. There's just not enough there. And that's why you're paying cash for a primary care doctor. And I'll bet that a lot of other people are paying cash for their primary care doctors across the country right now.
They are. I wanted I referred a friend to see my same primary care doctor. She says, no, she's done. She's full. She's at capacity. No more.
Yeah. Well, they don't have to. Yeah.
It's like, wow, he just the turn it down business.
Well, they're different. You know, a lot of what we do is one and done, not yeah. so much in cornea, but certainly for cataracts and refractive, where these other guys are repeat business.
Right.
And so it's a different model.
Yeah, I guess that's the physicians are smart, you know, innovative people. They're going to figure out a way to make it work.
Yeah.
And I guess it's going to be that. So, yeah, I certainly see a time where you just have to drop out of all plans and just, no, have the patients just pay you. Some physicians some ophthalmologists have done this in the past. It was a little bit tougher. I think they've suffered quite a bit.
Yeah.
Because at this point, patients are still going to say, no, I've got Medicare. I'm going to see someone who takes the Medicare.
Well, it's going to change. Anyway, I'm trying to be an optimist today.
I think me too. I'm an optimist too, but it's just quite a challenge. And the tough part is, I guess we've let it get so out of control for 20 plus years. Now it's really harder to get get this under control.
It is. It's going to be a harder lift, but I think we can do it. I think it's possible. And I think, you know, people hear this, hopefully they check into it. They're welcome to check any of the numbers I gave you. I always tell everybody, I have some white papers I've done. I said, now, if you find anything wrong with my numbers, tell me, because I'd like to know. So far, nobody's come back to correct me.
Right. Well, you made a good point, too. It's kind of just hidden. Now, I stopped going out to the local reps taking you to dinner here in L.A. because I'd rather eat food at home, to be honest.
Me too. Yeah, me too. Yeah, they go.
But in the past, I certainly did. And you know, yeah, you never ask what's the cost. Never.
Yeah.
And then the funny reply is, oh, it's no cost to your patient.
Yeah.
But where does the money come from? Ultimately, the taxpayer.
Well, the guy paying the premiums. Yeah.
Yeah, or for Medicare, yeah, the taxpayer, yeah. Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, just the cost out there is so bananas now. And I've seen the graphs where they say, where does the healthcare dollar go? And like the smallest little sliver of the pie is to physicians.
Yeah, right. It's getting smaller.
Right, but yet we get the most grief.
Well, where the reason they want to get rid of independent physicians, I think. I don't think it's a conspiracy theory. I think there's political people that want us out for political reasons, but I think if you look at the carriers and the hospitals, the physicians will very often steer their patients to the most cost-effective care and the most efficient. And it's not particularly the big university systems or some of the carrier-owned, you know, facilities. and they want to get rid of that. And also, since we do it cheaper, it's an embarrassment for what these guys charge.
Right.
But I think we need to, we need to point out, and there's a lot of data that shows this, that consolidation leads to increased cost. And we need to tell employers and people that can make a difference with congressional people that independent physicians keep the cost down.
But we're seeing less and less of those. There are billboards now in LA of the universities signing up their own Medicare, creating their own Medicare Advantage. Right.
Yeah. There's a lot of money there.
And advertising it like crazy. You cannot drive down the big freeways here without seeing billboards for this. So it's just like, wow. And all the departments are expanding. And now the old days, the university operating in one area and having the community doctors do the basic stuff and send the zebras, the unusual cases to the university, yeah, is gone. Now the university has a gazillion satellites out in the community and they just want everything.
Right. Yeah.
Oof. Makes me happy. I got quite a bit of gray in my beard here that I'm on the second half of my career.
You're getting there. You don't have as much as me yet.
Yeah. Give it time. Give it time, my friend. But I think, no, there's some certain challenges ahead. I think your advice is great. I just hope it ends up being effective. I mean, in the past, I was very, very motivated with this and writing letters, and this didn't do anything.
Oh, it doesn't, but I think time's right now.
Yeah.
We're at a tipping point where everybody's running out of money for healthcare.
Right.
And I think we have the ability to shape the way that it can go. It can go north or south. And I think we have the ability to help direct where it goes. And we need to get active. And I think especially the younger ones, they really need to pay attention to this because, yeah, you and I are just going to be doing it for a while. You and I could stop. We don't really need to work. We're working because we enjoy it. I suspect you're in the same boat.
Yeah.
And so we like what we do. But the ones that are young, they still got, 30, 40 years of practice. And they should really be taking an interest in spending time with their legislators.
It's so crazy to think that you can lobby legislators for basically pennies, and then they increase your fortunes by like magnitudes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just so crazy to me that how little it takes on that end to lobby them, and yet the return is 100 times or 1,000 times more than you paid to lobby them.
Well, I'm not sure we're going to get that much, but if we could just get some, it'd be nice. So my financial disclosures, I give this talk, I have at the bottom, I hope to get paid for what I do.
Right. Yeah, my big financial disclosures, I get paid to do surgery.
Yeah.
And I love to do it. It's gotten super complicated now. I just don't know what the correct answer is going to be for the future. For the young doctors, gosh, and I got two young kids who are going into medicine.
Yeah, my son just joined our practice.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, and we're trying to decide if we want to keep seeing all these ulcers because, they're money losers. But, like he said, somebody's got to take care of them. That's the problem.
Right. Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, ultimately, then if you don't, then the poor patient suffers.
Yeah.
And as you were saying earlier, as physicians, we got big hearts. I can't see a patient suffer. Whatever it takes, okay, just do it. Just whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a patient this last week, came back in and doesn't have health insurance anymore and needs a yak capsulotomy. Just do it. Just come on. Let me just do it. Take me a few minutes. Okay. I just can't see you suffer.
I just
have beautiful cataract surgery. I gotta get rid of that PCO. I gotta yag that thing. So then patient's obviously very happy. I was just like, pay what you can, whatever.
Maybe he's got a chicken.
Yeah, the old days, the country doctor bartering with the, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
There's something cool about that. But I guess it's a changing time. But even in ophthalmology, gosh, there's so much reform we need.
Yeah.
Again, starting with, like you said, hospital, academic center, buys a surgery center, changes the sign on the door, and I get paid three times as much or five times as much or twice as much with Medicare. Why? Because the money comes from somewhere.
It's and because so, they lobbied.
Right. Or, you know, honestly, the biggest one is it still blows my mind, and I thank goodness that I'm not a retina specialist, because I'd feel terrible if I'm 95% of the cost of me doing that individual injection goes to a drug company.
Yeah.
And then I got to be thankful for the scraps of like a few Amex points. I don't get it. I just don't get it. It just doesn't make any sense. But nothing's changed. You know, there's one that's there's a sign on one of the meetings, the Academy, Mirror, ACS, one of these, who knows, where it said like, oh, thank you from one of the companies that makes the anti-VEGF. I won't say which one. They said, thank you. We've done it for 10 plus years and have had like, I don't know, what it was like how many millions of injections, 30 million injections or something of this nature.
Yeah.
And then I said, wait a minute, I'm pretty good at math. Let's see, that's a lot of billions of dollars. Holy
it is.
Wow.
Yeah, that's why we're in trouble.
But yet we don't stop.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we can even. And then so I was like, I don't know. I mean.
Well, yeah, because we're killing the goose and there's just going to be no money. It's going to have to change.
So do we just let it kill the goose that's laying the golden eggs, and then let's just let it all go to hell, and then see what happens, then rebuild? Because I don't think we can change path of this train. There's too much momentum.
No, I think we got to get it to change course. Yeah, I think we can. Otherwise, it's going to implode. And you know, you've operated in other countries too. That's where it's going to end up. It's going to be pretty dreary.
Right. So for the young, our podcast, Cataract Coach in general is all ophthalmologists, but in particular, I think the lion's share of our audience is doctors and ophthalmologists in the 30s and 40s. So what's the three thing hit list that these young doctors, if you're in your 30s or 40s and you're listening to this podcast, here are the top three things from Dr. Price that you need to do to secure your future?
Well, I think the first thing is to understand what's happened to our fees.
Okay.
And compare it to the consumer price index, because if nothing else, we should be going up with the consumer price index. Otherwise, it's non-sustainable. And that's kind of the path we're on. And that's what you have to talk to the business people about. The second thing is to understand healthcare and to look at how independent practices actually save money for the healthcare system by delivering care less expensively and more efficiently, and to understand that. And the third is to look at how drug costs have gone up over time, and they're totally non-sustainable. And we need to educate because we need these drugs, and they do wonderful things for people. But basically, the patients and the health plans are being held hostage, and we need to get them at reasonable cost. And I think I would work with your local representatives, state and federal, to explain to them how this works, how we have to have sustainable rates for physicians, that the physicians can independently be sustained, and how we have to control drug cost.
Right.
Does that make sense?
No, it does for sure. It does for sure. Because, yeah, there's no question it's not sustainable. I mean, with now the sub-5, even for just a private practice for ophthalmology, a sub-$500 cataract fee, how can you? If I only did that and no premium refractive cataract surgery, I couldn't pay the overhead. I couldn't keep the lights on.
Right. And so I think that everybody wants to have their quality time, but I would recommend you take a bit of your quality time and learn about these areas and do something about it. Or you may not have any quality time going forward.
Right. Right. It's just... Gosh, I can't, as a private practice person, I just can't even imagine having to like work for these big groups. You're just a tiny little speck. They see you as easily replaced. Like, right. Okay, you complain, but okay, get rid of them. Next. Who's next?
Well, I mean, the thing is that there's nothing else in our economy or in life where everybody's the same value other than voting. But, you know, lawyers don't all get paid the same. Executives don't all get paid the same.
Mm-hmm.
One cannot replace the other, you know, in these different positions. And same thing with medicine. And they want to treat us all as if we're the same. And, you know, that's why some of us thrive in private practice, because we are different. We're looking at it differently, and we get different results. And that's what's important to point out, that you want to keep this individuality. You can look at the results in the UK, and they're pretty pretty scary. Mm. When you, at least for transplants, we look at the results. It's not good. And so it's good to have independence, and people get rewarded for doing good things rather than everybody just getting paid the same.
Right. I mean, look when it comes to a transplant, when it comes to like a DMEC, I get paid the same as you, but yours is going to be way prettier. If it's my eye, I want you to do it. I don't want to do it.
We'll save a spot for you.
Yeah, you're right. Day one in practice, fresh out of training versus a world-renowned expert, pay the same.
Right.
That didn't make any sense. So then maybe it's time for ophthalmologists to be like plastic surgeons. We're here in LA, dermatology. I can't find a single dermatologist in all of Los Angeles who takes any insurance.
Really?
I just can't. Patients ask me, one refer, none of them take it at all.
Well, that's where it's going to go for all of us. Yeah. And like you say, it's the people on the lower economic scale that are going to really be hurt by that.
It'll be a two-tiered system of care.
Yeah.
The ones who can't afford to pay out of pocket get maybe not quite the same care as those who can pay out of pocket for the very best. It'll be like plastic surgery now, mm-hmm. or dermatology, or even the genius dentists, smarter than I ever was.
Yeah, they don't take Medicaid. They don't do insurance. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
They don't work Fridays.
Right. Well, for my dentist, yeah, I have the best dental insurance. You know what that is? A checkbook. I just, whatever you add, I just write them a check.
Right, right.
That's so there. I guess maybe that's the way it goes. Maybe there is then, and it eventually goes into, this is totally not sustainable. Maybe it goes to a two-tiered system then. I don't know. Maybe we just have, like I'm doing now, have health insurance for things that are super catastrophic, have a super high deductible just in case. Maybe they make it even higher, $25,000 deductible, fine. And I'll just pay everything out of pocket, which is what I'm doing now. My primary care doctor, my dentist, whatever I do, I saw a dermatologist. It's just all, I write a check.
Yeah.
And then hopefully I won't get hit by the bus or have the brain tumor or the heart failure, and then I won't need the catastrophic insurance then. Oh, so wild. So wild. It's a little bit scary to think of all this stuff. It really is.
Oh, well, no, I think the more you understand it, the more you see that we can make some changes.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. The young doctors, boys, you need to take control of this. Absolutely. Are you lecturing on this topic coming up at the ASCRS in Washington, D.C.?
I don't think they want me to talk.
See, that's the other thing. Then that begs the question. Are all the associations, are they looking out for the association or are they looking out for the physician?
Yeah, remember? It's hard to say. Right. But I'll be talking in West Virginia next spring, early summer. They want me to talk about cornea, and I said, okay, if I can talk about healthcare, it's my second talk. They said, sure. I did that at Vanderbilt. And so anymore, that's my routine.
Well, I think it's a super important topic. If I ran a meeting, I'll for sure invite you and have you speak there. And in fact, like I said, this podcast it'll reach about 10,000 ophthalmologists in the month after it's released.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what kind of feedback you get. Some people probably say they don't want to hear about it. And
I bet you, as far as it goes, the podcast, I bet you this will be a very, very popular one, because it's a topic that I'm ignorant about. I don't know nearly enough. And I think that kind of applies to 95% of ophthalmologists. We just don't know enough about this. We see the suffering we're doing. We're like, oh my gosh, another fee cut. And I promise myself, here's the funny part too. I'm such a wimp. I promise myself, if it goes below 500, I'm quitting Medicare, forget it. And now it's like 460. Well, it's not that bad. I'll just continue.
Well, it's the frog in the pot. You know that story.
Oh yeah. So the goes in the cool water, and then the heat turns on, and then eventually the frog's boiled.
It happens slowly, so it doesn't notice the change. Yeah.
And that's kind of, yeah, I've noticed for even me, when I finished my residency and started practicing in the year 2000s when I started, I think it was maybe $1,100 for a surgery fee for cataract in the year $2,000.
Yeah.
And now you want to pay sub $500 in the year 2025 dollars. That's a heck of a challenge.
It is. Well, if you think you could put them in, I can always send some slides to you to show rather than me a couple of times if you want.
Yeah, if you email me the slides, happy to show that here. If you're listening to the podcast on audio only, check out the video up on YouTube or on cataractcoach.com, and I'll include the slides. I'll also, whatever links you want to send me, whether it's your practice website or it's anything else, whatever links you put in there, I will happily include those as well.
So those Yeah, my practice website doesn't have any of this. Okay. Other than recommending people should sign up for traditional Medicare rather than Medicare Advantage. I think that's the only thing we have on there. But Uday, wow, this has been fun.
Yeah, I can't believe we've been talking for an hour. Well, I want to thank you. Here I had like all these corny questions written down that I want to talk to you about, but this was far more enlightening.
Well, anytime you want to do cornea, you know, I love cornea, and be happy to go over that.
Well, my only one question with cornea is, when are we getting to the point where we can just inject the cells in the AC, have the patient lie face down for an hour or two, and then be done? Is that coming?
There's some people that think it is, and there are two phase 3 studies that are either started or will be starting the first quarter of next year that are looking at that. So that's probably a year or two away. And then there's at least two other groups that are in preclinicals. So there's a lot of people looking at that. But that's going to be, you know, like what you were talking about with the retinal injections. You get like $100 for an injection, and it's going to be a lot more for the cells.
It's somewhere in the 6-digit range, I'm sure.
Yeah, it looks like it. Yeah.
Oh boy. So again, so another thing that's completely not sustainable.
Actually at the World Cornea Congress, I did a session on Fuchs, and I had everybody talk about what the potential treatment was going to cost, because we're looking at, you know, future and current treatments, and I got some backlash for covering cost. But I thought, you know, hey, people need to start talking about this. And, anyway,
yeah, that's the crazy part. You should get any backlash. It is what it is. You didn't set the cost. You set the cost. Right. So when you see these drops that are causing this much, or these IV infusions that are costing, you know, $800,000, that's some corporate guy that chose that number. Don't be ashamed of it.
Right.
It's so wild. Anyway, again, I want to thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure. Again, send me the links or send me the slides. I'll definitely include them here. And if you're listening to the audio podcast, check it out on cataractcoach.com or on YouTube. And remind our listeners and viewers, remember, we got a new Cataract Coach podcast every single Sunday on Apple, Amazon, Spotify, Google. Anywhere you find a podcast, you find the Cataract Coach podcast. Plus, on top of that, of course, we have a new Cataract Coach video thing every single day. And now we have our sister channel, Retina Rounds, also videos and podcasts. Until next time, I'll catch you later.